This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
December 4th was an important date in transplantation because a new organ allocation system was implemented. And it has changed fairly dramatically how we select patients when we have a deceased kidney donor. So to explain all this and how it affects your patients, we have Dr. Chris Fries here. But to make his task a tiny bit more challenging, we gave him a panel of Sandy Feng and Alison Weber.
All right, thank you, Flavio. There it is. Okay, great. Well, thanks again, Flavio. So as Dr. Vincenti mentioned, and to any of you who have been coming to this meeting for the past decade, probably remember a lot of theoretical discussions about the new allocation system, what it might look like, a lot of changes. Whatever you heard the year before, you could pretty much forget because they changed the new design of the kidney allocation system. But it finally is here, and it is in practice as of December 4th of last year. So what I'd like to try and do in the next few minutes is to present sort of a practical talk about how the kidney allocation system has changed our practice. And it's very important, I think, for you all to understand this because I'm sure your patients will have questions. And then at the end, we'll have a panel discussion to sort of go over some cases that help to illustrate some of these concepts. So again, this new allocation system did take a whole decade to develop. There were a lot of issues with ethics and different types of modeling and, you know, a lot of different camps that had to be satisfied with the final product. But we're finally there, and it's been put into practice in December of 2014. And you've probably heard a little bit of these general concepts of what the new allocation system hopes to achieve. Probably the biggest thing is that kidneys that are offered to patients essentially look like them. In other words, this concept of longevity matching, which is particularly relevant to the most perfect kidneys going into the recipients that have the best predicted survival from transplant. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the details of that. At the other end, not necessarily by design, but probably more by default, are the patients who don't have great access to transplant under this new system and would have to think about accepting more marginal kidneys if they want to undergo a transplant. One other big change that we've certainly noticed immediately when the new system went into effect is that highly sensitized patients now receive marked advantage in terms of listing with much broader sharing of kidneys. So patients who before we would say may never have a chance at transplant because they had 100% antibodies are now getting offers left and right. So that's been a significant change in our practice. A significant thing for patients is that their waiting time now goes back to when they started dialysis. It's no longer when they were actually listed at a transplant center. And then lastly, the other thing that really impacts our practice is there's now a broader sharing of the more marginal kidneys, the kidneys with the so-called KDPI of greater than 85%, roughly equivalent to what we know as the expanded donors, are now shared regionally rather than just being offered at the local level. So this is a slide you're going to see several times during my talk. It really sort of outlines what the allocation system looks like depending on what the quality of the kidney is. And if you focus on just the two sides of the slide, you have sequence A. You can think of it as grade A kidneys if you like. These have a very low KDPI. They're the best kidneys out there. And they will get offered, again, to the patients who have the best predicted survival. So local patients with a 20% estimated post-transplant survival. They'll also go to prior living donors, which is a nice feature of the system. Basically, they're going to the patients who are going to have the best outcome. At the other end of the spectrum, you have the kidneys that are not as good a quality that will be shared, again, locally and regionally. And then in between, you have kidneys ranging between a KDPI score of 20 up to 85%. And again, they'll be distributed as shown on this slide. So I want to run through some key definitions. There's a lot of alphabet soup here in this new allocation system, and I want to make sure you have a grasp of certain definitions as well as some concepts of how this new system works. So I want to talk a little detail about the KDPI, this estimated post-transplant survival, what the high KDPI kidneys mean and what process we have for allocating those, and then also a new change in the new allocation system is A2 and A2B donors can now be used in B recipients. And then I also want to chat briefly about the highly sensitized patient. So what is this KDPI exactly? Well, what it is a calculated score based on donor variables. And these are variables that we would know before the organ is actually recovered, which makes practical sense. And here are the 10 factors that go into the KDPI. And using an analysis to correlate these various factors with outcome is how the estimated graft survival was determined. So if you look here at graft survival rate, and kidney donor profile index, it goes from 0 to 100%. The lower the score, the better quality of the kidney. And you can see that directly correlates with 1 year and 2 year survival, shown in red. At the other end of the spectrum, when you start to hit KDPI scores greater than 85%, and certainly at the extremes, 90 and 100%, you can see there's a pretty steep drop-off in the predicted survival. So this is where the method of ranking kidneys, if you will, was developed. Now, on the other end of the calculation, of course, is who should get which quality kidney, and the way that that was determined in the new system is utilizing this estimated post-transplant survival. And what this really is a calculator, in a sense. You can go on to the UNOS website and plug in these features of your patient, age, whether they have diabetes currently, their time on dialysis, and whether they've had a previous transplant, and using a rather complicated formula, which can then be mapped to a special table, you'll get your patient's EPTS score. And this is really only important for patients who have the best predicted survival. So patients who are the top tier in terms of predicted survival, in other words, EPTS score that's very high, so it's the opposite of KDPI, will get the low KDPI kidneys. So EPTS, estimated post-transplant survival, that's very high, get the best kidneys. And that's really how the EPTS is helpful. It's really only to help figure out who's going to get these really grade A kidneys, if you will. If you're not in this upper tier in terms of your EPTS score, it's a little bit more difficult to predict your position on the list. We've been sort of trying to figure this out because, of course, we have many patients on the list. We want to know who we want to have ready at any given point for transplant. So anytime there's a kidney offer, we can actually look at the match run that's generated by UNOS, and this is just a rank order of the patients, and we can begin to see patterns of patients that are clustered near the top and focus our efforts on having those patients ready to go. Of course, how that list shakes out is all based on the quality of the kidney, so it's a little bit of a tricky business to figure out exactly where patients might end up, unless they're these high EPTS patients. So how does this all confuse us and confuse patients? Well, they want to know where they are in line. And if you think of the world of kidney transplant as a line waiting for coffee and donuts, with coffee and donuts being your kidney, in the old system it was very easy to know who's in the front of the line. It's the guy that got up in the morning and was there first. And the guys way in the back, you can tell them they're going to wait a long time, but if they go around the back, there's maybe some cold soup and not as fresh a donut. They can get in much quicker. And everyone else in the middle just could kind of watch how they progress in the line. Well, with the new system, it's much trickier. The folks at the front of the line are still highly sensitized patients, and patients with the high EPTS. So they're somewhat predictable. The folks at the back of the line are probably, again, the patients who are not going to have as good a survival, and they can still be advised to go around the back for the less than optimal kidney. And then the game changer is this guy here who isn't even in line. He may be highly sensitized, has been on dialysis for 10 years, and he shows up at the transplant center, and he gets to move right to the front. So you can understand how patients would be a little confused. We're a little confused by this. And again, I think our experience in the last 4 months has really helped us at least to better understand how these patients flow through the line. So I just want to talk a little bit about the concept of ECD, which hopefully you're all very familiar with. That was our kind of a label for marginal kidneys for the last 15 years, and it was based really just on three factors as in addition to age. And again, hopefully you're all familiar with this. We had to consent patients to receive these types of kidneys. The KDPI gives a little bit more granularity in terms of ranking the quality of kidney, but basically the policy says that a KDPI score of greater than 85% will still be handled like the old system of ECD. And what that means is the patients, potential recipients, must be pre-consented to know that they're getting a kidney that doesn't have as long of a predicted survival. The new change, which I think is a good one, is that these kidneys are now shared more broadly. So, you know, if you're in a region where you may have some less aggressive centers in the state next door, if you're sharing more broadly, your patients may now have an opportunity to receive those kidneys. Transplant programs can decide amongst themselves who's going to be eligible for these high KDPI kidneys. At UCSF, we're using the same criteria that we used for ECD kidneys, namely patients with a history of diabetes and age over 40 would be eligible, or any patient over age 60. We do have size criteria, BMI less than 32 and an overall weight less than 90 kilograms, just because we think you're essentially getting less of a nephron mass, and it makes sense to put these into patients that aren't real large. So what about this A2 donor business? Well, it was decided that blood group B recipients seem to have a little bit longer wait on the list, and it is possible to use donors that are either characterized as A2 or A2B donors. They have less of the A antigen on their cells and actually can be safely transplanted into B recipients who have low titers of anti-A. This is also a voluntary program. The centers can decide which patients and how they're going to work this system. What we've decided to do is to have patients screened at the time they come in for their evaluation, or essentially when they go on the list. If they're a blood type B recipient, they will get screened for anti-A titers, and if they're 1 to 8 or less, they will be considered eligible for this program. The limited literature out there suggests that if you're in that titer range, you should do as well as somebody who gets a blood group compatible kidney. The UNOS policy does require these patients to be consented, so we do that. And then, of course, things may change. It may be another 5 years before they get called in for their transplant. So when they're called in for this essentially ABO incompatible kidney, they get their titer repeated, and they have to continue to be less than 1 to 8 to move forward. And then the last principle I want to go over that's different from the old policy is the advantage that's given now to the very highly sensitized patients. I'm sure you all have patients who are 100% PRA. They haven't gotten a call from us for 10 years. They probably are getting a lot of calls now because the systems really change. And what's happened and made this change are two things, really. First of all, patients who have a PRA of greater than 100% get an incredible amount of points. And the way to think about these points, 1 year of waiting time is essentially like 1 point. So this guy has about 200 years of waiting time. So he's going to obviously be very high on the list. In addition, of the 8,000 deceased donors that are available in the country each year, he's going to be eligible to receive or at least be offered one of those kidneys or many of those kidneys, because those kidneys are shared nationally. So if you're PRA of 100%, kidneys are shared nationally. PRA of 99%, they're shared regionally. And then 98% and below, they're shared locally. So this has, not surprisingly, resulted in a lot more of these patients getting offers for transplant. And if you look at our current wait list, just focus at the bottom here, you can see we have between the 98, 99, and 100 percenters, we have about 250 patients. So we could be transplanting high PRA patients for a year or two and not completely exhaust our list. So what has the initial experience been nationally? Of course, anytime there's a major policy change, you worry about unintended consequences. Is this new policy really achieving what it was set out to do? Obviously, it's still very early in the implementation of this new policy, but there is some preliminary data that looks at about the first month that UNOS is reported to keep us all assured that this hasn't had a lot of unintended consequences. So if you look across the bottom here, and this is true in the next two figures, you can see where this dotted line is where the new system went into play. This just looks at the kidney wait list. Not surprisingly, it hasn't markedly changed between pre-new system and post-new system. There has been a little bit of a drop-off in the number of patients listed. It's hard to tell in the usual noise of month-to-month listing numbers if this is a real difference or not. But theoretically, it might be that centers are saying, well, patients going to get backdated on their time to dialysis, so why do we actually have to list them right now if we don't think they're the perfect candidate. So we'll have to see if that trend continues. In terms of transplants that were performed, this is a little bit busy slide. The top line here is our region, and you can see pre versus post implementation of the new system. There hasn't really been a marked change. Again, this is something that'll have to be watched. The real differences come from looking at some of the specific groups that are thought to have been advantaged by this new system. And one feature that's very clear, and again, this is by design, is that the difference in donor and recipient age greater than 15 years has really dropped way down. And of course, that's because the more perfect kidneys, which tend to be from younger donors, are going into younger recipients. So that age disparity issue is become much smaller. African-American patients have gone up a little bit. Again, that trend will have to be followed. Not surprisingly, with the greater sharing that's built into the new system, we've gone from 20% shared kidneys to almost 40% shared kidneys. This obviously comes with logistical costs, now having to fly kidneys around the country. But again, it's getting, we think, the right patients transplanted. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the highly sensitized patients, which on average were about 2.5 to 3% of transplants each month, have now shot up to almost 18%. In terms of utilization, and this is where we really want to look for unintended consequences, make sure there isn't a greater discard of kidneys because of all the sharing and last-minute backing out of centers because of ischemia time or whatnot. And if you look at the number of kidneys recovered, it's remained fairly flat across the time of implementation of the new system. The kidney discard rate for high KDPI kidneys, which is a whopping 60%, two-thirds of the high KDPI kidneys are currently not even being utilized. They're discarded. And that hasn't changed. I would hope we'd see some improvement there as busier, more aggressive centers like ourselves maybe get offered these kidneys more often and are trying to get a cohort of patients transplanted. Number of kidney donors recovered hasn't really changed. And the overall discard rate is up a little bit. But again, this is within the noise of usual month-to-month variation. Well, what about at our own center? Again, just to remind everybody, we do have criteria for allowing a patient just in the door for an evaluation. They're pretty loose. I mean, we see just about everyone you send us, unless they are actively smoking. They have to be off their cigarettes for greater than 6 months. They can't using alcohol or substance abuse excessively. And we do have a sort of a line in the sand, if you will, for BMI less than 40. So we'll see all these patients. Now, occasionally we'll have patients, more than occasionally, most of the patients, when we see them during evaluation, they look like great candidates, we go ahead and list them. But now with this new idea of who's going to wait, how long, and dating back to dialysis, it may be that some the marginal candidates, after they're discussed, won't actually be listed unless they have a living donor. And I think you've heard that from us before. But a new concept is if you have a patient who's outside of our BMI criteria, in other words, they were small enough to get in the door for evaluation, but they're still too big to actually have a transplant, because our transplant criteria is a little bit lower than our evaluation criteria, and they're on dialysis, so there's no penalty in not having them immediately on the list. We'll advise them about the weight loss goals, give them some hints on how to make that happen, whether it's bariatric surgery or a formal weight loss program, and then when they get closer to their BMI goal, we can actually have them listed at that point, and they haven't incurred any penalty in terms of losing waiting time because it can be backdated to when they were on dialysis. So these are some of the strategies that you may confuse you a little bit as to why a patient isn't listed. It may be that they will be listed once they hit certain goals. So, and we have to do this because our list is really large. It's the biggest in the country, and we want to keep it manageable. With greater than 5,200 patients on the list, we've also had a hard time without knowing who's at the front of the line at any given point, having patients ready to go for transplant. So what we've noticed with the high PRA patients, many of whom we may not have seen for 5 or 6 years, they'll get an offer. What we do, we don't want to lose that offer for them. It may be their only opportunity, is to bring them in for an expedited workup, mostly focusing on their cardiovascular assessment. So we're doing cardiac caths in the middle of the night to make sure if they're an acceptable candidate to go through the surgery, so our cardiology colleagues are affected by this as well. If we find significant disease, which we have in several cases, we'll tell them now's the time to come off the list. You're not going to be a candidate for transplant. But if they pass that test, then we're ready to move forward. And then additionally, as I mentioned earlier, we get a sort of a snapshot of what the wait list looks like, and we're trying to figure out who's repeatedly showing up near the top so we can focus on those patients to have their testing done electively ahead of time before they get called in. So if you look at our experience since the new system went into place, we've had about 83 transplants. The really shocking number is the amount of patients with 80% PRA or greater, 48% of those patients. So nearly half of the transplants we've done are in patients with a CPRA of 80% or greater. And if you look at our previous UNOS statistics down here, it's a little hard to see, but generally that ran about 20% of patients. So, we've essentially more than doubled the number of high PRA patients that we're doing, which again is something you may start to notice in your practice when your patients who have been on dialysis for 10 years aren't showing up at the unit anymore. So what I wanted to do to further illustrate some of these points is to actually have some cases presented. So I'll ask my panel to come up. And if you were here last year, you probably remember Dr. Stock did this. I was on the panel, and we had two of my colleagues as well. We were affectionately referred to as Larry, Curly, and Mo. So I've decided this is Laverne and Shirley. I don't know who's who, but we got the bar stools, too, to go along with that theme. And what we're going to do here is just quickly present some cases. And you should know that the surgeons accept the kidneys in the middle of the day, middle of the night. So, you'll see a lot of these decisions are very complicated. Some of them involve patient discussion. We do have our nephrology colleagues available if there's difficulties with determining whether a kidney might be safe to use or not. So it is a team approach, but the surgeons are kind of making these initial calls. So here's one example. Donor A, it's a 19-year-old, had a head trauma as a cause of death, a terminal creatinine of 0.6. Now, I'm sure you all are aware of these high-risk donors in terms of transmission of infectious disease. This donor was labeled as high risk with the new public health system guidelines due to male sexual contact. If you calculate the KDPI, it's 3%. So remember, that's low. That's a really great kidney, and it isn't degraded by the fact that they're a high risk for disease transmission. If you look at high-risk donors, there's, you know, different flavors of high-risk. There's men having sex with other men. That's pretty high, 4.2 out of 10,000 cases in the era of NAT testing are predicted to potentially pass on HIV. IV drug users are also a very high-risk high-risk donor. And then you have less risk, an incarcerated donor, for instance, maybe less than one case in 10,000. So we need to know kind of what the history is to determine when we talk to patients just how high risk this high risk is. So this, again, would be a sequence A kidney, a grade A kidney, if you will, but with the high risk feature thrown in. And so the recipient that popped up on the match run was in sequence number 4. So, you know, all the patients in the country basically are ranked in this match run. So this patient is obviously very near the top. And it was a 50-year-old, history of hypertension and interstitial nephritis as their cause of end-stage renal disease. This patient, as is our practice with advising patients, fortunately had consented to a high-risk donor previously. And again, she was getting this offer because her PRA was 100%. So I'll ask my medicine colleague, what do you think of this kidney?
I think it's an excellent kidney, and I think it's an appropriate recipient for this kidney, so I would go forward with the transplant.
Okay. Sandy?
Green light.
Green light. Okay. Well, I said green light, too, and we did the transplant, and everything was great. You know, she will be monitored, of course, for any evidence of disease transmission. Hopefully, we'll have none. Donor B is a little bit less good quality kidney. It's a 57-year-old, BMI at 28, had some history of hypertension, although was supposedly compliant with their medications, died of a CVA. So these are both features that will increase your KDPI. Terminal creatinine was still good, but the KDPI calculated out at 79%. This donor also was a high risk because they were incarcerated. So on the high risk scale, they're on the lower end of the high risk, but again, still high risk, and so the recipient needs to hear about that. So again, this patient would fall into sequence C. So, you know, not the worst kidneys, certainly not the best, but kind of where most of the kidneys are, in the middle. And the potential recipient is an interesting case, a 54-year-old end-stage renal from ANCA vasculitis. Previously had a transplant, failed after about 14 years, went back on dialysis only since 2012, but again was highly sensitized, 100% PRA, which is why they were getting this offer. This patient had signed up for a high-risk donor previously. The interesting feature about this particular person is they were trying to find another living donor. Unfortunately, they were cross-match incompatible. So as a way to maybe get another living donor kidney, this patient had two potential donors that they put into the exchange pool, hoping that with the National Kidney Exchange pool that we participate in, there would be another living donor found. So at the time she came in, I had to advise her about the high-risk nature of the kidney, the quality of the kidney, and this was on the background of her knowing that she had her irons in the fire, if you will, for two other donors in the exchange pool, hoping to get another living donor kidney. So what do you think about this one, Allison?
Well, obviously, this is a lot less straightforward than the last one. The quality of the donor kidney is obviously worse than the first option. And this person has two potential donors in the exchange pool, but has been not been able to match in 6 months. And with the CPRA of 100%, I think this would be someone I would probably, you know, encourage to go forward with this transplant because of just having a low likelihood of getting a transplant in general, even with those two donors that they placed in the exchange pool.
Okay, Sandy?
That's my thought.
One in the hand, worth two in the bush.
Okay. So how many out there would like this kidney? If this was your patient, who would want this kidney for their patient out there knowing this scenario? So less than half, huh? Okay. Well, she did, you know, I was telling Allison, sometimes I feel like Monty Hall. You know, you have
exactly.
Door number one here, which is, you know what you have. It's a sort of a high-risk donor, and KDPI is not, you know, the best, but it is within what we would call a standard criteria donor versus, you know, hoping that door number two carries a living donor down the road, but it may carry nothing. So she did agree to move forward. The transplant was successful, and one other thing that I think made us all feel better is, and we're always free to ask for this, I didn't on this particular case, but another center did. But once I saw this, I also let her know that, and she felt much better about moving forward. It was really a very good donor kidney biopsy. So that kind of helped with the decision. And it points out the fact that KDPI in a vacuum is probably not ideal. Obviously, we don't want to be biopsying every kidney because we're going to find things that, you know, are going to cloud our judgment in some cases. But I think in this case, it was very helpful knowing that she had other options to help her understand that this was probably a good option. And she did well. Her creatinine's 1.5, doing great. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, just waiting on dialysis is really not a great option. I think it was very sobering to me to learn that the advantage of a living donor kidney is actually erased by 2 to 3 extra years of dialysis. So my concern with her is really just ongoing dialysis. So I do think that the one in the hand versus two in the bush is an important consideration for this patient.
Yeah.
You know, she had been waiting 6 months with, you know, those two potential donors. Is there sort of a time period where you have an inflection point where is 6 months at that point? Or?
Yeah. So if you look at, again, we're in with the National Kidney Registry, which is probably the most successful paired exchange consortium in the country. And they have ways to help predict, you know, when somebody might get a potential cross-match compatible donor. The problem is not just this recipient, but it's also their donor. So, for instance, if they had an older donor, and by that I'll say, you know, a donor that's kind of in the high KDPI range, a donor 65, that's a blood group AB, let's say, that kidney won't go very far in an exchange program. Now, if they have a 20-year-old blood group O donor, that kidney is going to generate a lot more potential matches. So it's pretty complicated to predict when somebody might get that offer. In general, if you look at the pool of patients remaining in the NKR, as you might expect, a lot of them are these highly sensitized patients, which brings up another interesting point, what these kidney exchange programs are going to look like in another year or two as we're rapidly transplanting these highly sensitized patients, a lot of which drive the population within these exchange programs. So again, it's if you could say, yeah, wait another year, you're going to for sure get a kidney another year, that'd be helpful. But that information is a little bit hard to grasp. Okay, case three, a donor that's a 66-year-old, BMI of 25, died of a CVA, very common story, terminal creatinine 0.5, the KDPI 91%. Again, this would be a high KDPI kidney. Sequence D would be where it would be. The recipient is a 63-year-old. Don't know why she has ESRD. She's been on hemodialysis now for, you know, over 7 years. She had previously consented to a high KDPI kidney, which is, of course, the protocol. And the interesting thing that I was quite shocked by, and again, this is part of the learning process that we're going through, is she showed up as patient number 65. So that means there's 64 patients ahead of her in Region 5, which is the five-state region, California, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, and Arizona, 64 patients ahead of her. So if you think, wow, KDPI 91%, you know, maybe you could wait for something better. You've got 64 patients ahead of her that are thinking the same thing. So what do you think about this one, Allison?
Well, I think this is also tricky, but this we may want to go forward. I would perhaps like some more information on the kidney, if there is any more information in terms of a biopsy. Is there any more information on this kidney?
Yeah, I think in this one, the biopsy material was lost on the way to the lab. How about that?
I think that it would be, she should probably go forward with this transplant. That's probably what I would suggest as well.
Okay.
Even without the added information.
I like it. 0.5, that's pretty sexy in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So, that, you know, I think the point that Chris made, you know, not all kidneys. We know that ECD was not a fair description, and I think we know that KDBI is not, you know, a fair descriptor. And I really like kidneys with low creatinines. I'm very suspicious of kidney donors or donors when they present right after whatever happened to them with a high creatinine, because we know that if we ligate their kidneys, take them out, 2 hours later, they should still have a fairly normal creatinine. So I like this kidney. I go for it.
Well, I liked it too, so did the patient, and her creatinine now is 1.8. She's doing very well. Case four, donor, the 56-year-old.
Questions. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Say again?
I said, how often do you see a 65 years old person unless they're incredibly low muscle mass with a creatinine 0.5?
Yeah.
That was the lab error.
Yeah, but even like 0.8 is good. So yeah. Even if the muscle mass is reduced, which admittedly it is, you know, unless you have somebody with cerebral palsy that's in a wheelchair, you know, 0.5 is still, you know, not too shabby for. Yeah, it is. That's why it's surprisingly good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so the next one, a 56-year-old, also suffered a stroke, but actually wasn't brain dead. So this was going to be a donation after cardiac death donor. Had some history of hypertension, creatinine of 1.8, not so good as the last case. And because of these features, DCD, the high terminal creatinine, age, and hypertension, the KDPI calculated out at 98%. So we're getting out to the far right of this spectrum. And, I jumped ahead. What about this one else?
Well, I think that this one obviously is a lot more concerning. The creatinine of 1.8, technically, you know, the ECD status, the high KDPI status, and the fact that the kidney is a DCD kidney with a terminal creatinine of 1.8. Then, of course, I have this added information of the biopsy, which looks pretty bad. So this transplant, I would not accept this kidney.
Now, without the biopsy information, would anyone be interested in this kidney for their patient? Any hands? I'll talk to you later if I see your hand. Okay. Sandy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think if I'm desperate to do a kidney transplant, I might request the biopsy. If I'm not in a desperate moment, I think I'd roll over and go to bed.
That's exactly what I did. I hung up the phone before I even heard the biopsy information. So, as Allison alluded to, the concept of an ECD, DCD is a bad combination, and we know that from the ECD days. I suspect it'll hold true with the KDPI classification as well. All right, one more. So this is a 13-year-old donor, was an attempted suicide, but she suffered severe brain injury, wasn't brain dead, so it was a planned DCD donor. Very low creatinine, KDPI calculated out to about 29%, probably mostly driven by the fact that this was going to be a DCD. And it was an A2B blood type, which, you know, we didn't think we'd see many of these, but here we have one. I think this was our first organ offer in this new system that was an A2B blood type. What do you think of this donor?
I think it's a fabulous donor.
Okay.
13-year-old, great creatinine, low KDPI. And I think it'd be appropriate if we had any patients who qualify via titers.
Okay. Sandy, you agree?
Yeah, this is winning the lottery.
All right. So again, this is a kidney, not the most perfect, but actually very good, sequence B. And we, in fact, did have a recipient who had previously been consented to receive technically an ABO incompatible, but as part of this A2 program. The interesting thing about this patient, they were first evaluated in 2012, but with the new system, they could backdate their waiting time to 2007. So that, in combination with the fact that it was a blood group B, probably is why this patient was so high on the match run. In fact, they were number one on the match run. So the patient had previously had an anti-A titer that was less than 1:8, which is why they were eligible for this. And, of course, we repeated the anti-A titer at the time of when they came in the hospital. It was still low, so we moved forward with the transplant. And this patient has also done very well. So it's nice to see that all the extra work that goes into these A2 kidneys in terms of consenting patients ahead of time, checking titers, did result in a transplant. So thank you, panelists.
Just that was good. That was easy.
quick conclusions here. So, you know, the new system definitely has had some challenges. We're learning, as I'm sure you all will, and hopefully this has been helpful so you can answer some of your patients' questions. Obviously, you can always refer them back to us if they have questions that you can't answer, because it is hard to determine who might get an offer, which is one of the challenges. The other thing that I've started to think about is now we have these high PRA patients, you know, 100%, they're going to get a fair number of offers. Do we want to lower the threshold as to what we'd accept? In other words, do you still not think too much about a KDPI 79? Do you want to now bring it down to a KDPI of 30, you know, to try and draw a little bit better kidney, knowing they're going to get exposed to more offers? So that's something that remains to be seen. And then, of course, this extra testing for blood type B recipients is a bit of a challenge. The opportunities, we now have a wider area to draw from for KDPI greater than 85% kidneys, which I think will help our patients who have aren't advantaged by the EPTS score. And, of course, the very highly sensitized patients you're going to see now getting transplants. And then I think, you know, we always would love to have more kidneys, but living donor, we would love to do more of those. And I think trying to explain some of these concepts to patients and some of the unpredictability of the current system gives us another kind of edge, if you will, to think more strongly about living donation. So, you know, maybe that'll pan out in terms of more living donor transplants. So I'll stop there. And do I have time for questions? Or
maybe one question.
One question. Yes.
What is the status with the undocumented patients? Because I have several, and a lot of times they are very young, and they usually have two or three people that would be willing to be their donors. So these are patients that come with three kidneys, but without papers.
Right. That's a whole nother discussion. You know, I think, we've been trying to serve those patients as best we can. It's logistically has its own set of challenges, but we've been working through some of those cases. So it's still potentially an option that could be worked out. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Great.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.